times to count. The books on those shelves have been witness to too many screaming matches. The pages have soaked up too many tears in the aftermath of our endless fighting, and the image of Hardin crumpled on his knees in front of me is so strong it's practically imprinted into the floor. This place is no longer the treasure to me that it once was, and these walls now hold memories of sadness and betrayal, not only Hardin's, but Steph's as well.
"What's wrong?"
Hardin asks the moment my expression turns melancholy. "Nothing, I'm fine," I tell him. I want to shake off the unpleasant memories lodging in my mind, taking away from these moments of happiness at being reunited with Landon and my father after the lonely weeks I've endured in Seattle.
"I'm not buying it,"
Hardin huffs, but drops it and walks into the kitchen. After a second, his voice travels into the living room.
"Is there no food in the place?" "Ah, here it goes. It had been so nice and quiet,"
my father whispers to Landon, and they share a friendly laugh. I'm so thankful to have Landon in my life, and to have what seems to be a budding relationship with my father, though it seems that Hardin and Landon both know him better than I do. "I'll be back in just a minute," I say. I want to change out of this heavy sweatshirt. It's too warm in the small apartment, and I feel my lungs yearning for a fresh breath as the moments pass. I need to read Hardin's letter again. It's my favorite thing in the entire world. It's much more than a thing to me. It expresses his love and passion in a way that his mouth never could. I've read it so many times that I have it memorized, but I need to physically touch it again. Once I hold the tattered and worn pages between my fingers, all the anxiety I'm feeling will be replaced by his thoughtful words, and I'll be able to breathe again and enjoy my weekend here. I search the top of the dresser and each drawer before moving along to the desk. My fingers push through piles of paperclips and pens to no avail. But where else could he have placed it? I find my e-reader and the bracelet resting on top of my religion journal, but the letter is nowhere to be found. After placing the bracelet on the desk, I move to the closet and search through the empty shoebox that Hardin uses to store his work files during the week. I lift the lid to find it empty, except one single piece of paper, which, I'm sad to see, is not the letter. What is this, though? Hardin's handwriting is scribbled across it from top to bottom, and if I wasn't so worried about my letter, I would stop to check it out. It's really weird that this paper is randomly here. I make a mental note to come back and read the scribbles on that page, and put the lid back onto the box and store it back where I found it. Worrying that I may have overlooked the letter in the drawer, I march back to the dresser. What if Hardin threw it away? No, he wouldn't. He knows how much that letter means to me. He'd never do that. I pull my old journal out once more, turn it upside down, and shake it, hoping the letter will fall out. I'm beginning to panic until a flicker of white catches my attention. It's a shred of paper twirling through the air between my journal and the floor. I reach down and pick it up just as it lands on the floor. I recognize the words immediately. They're practically etched into my mind. It's only half a sentence, almost too small to read, but the ink-smeared words are clearly written in Hardin's handwriting. My stomach drops. I stare at the fragment of paper, and the realization hits me. I just know that he did, in fact, destroy it. I begin to weep, and let the shred slip from my shaking fingers and fall back to the floor. My heart is instantly broken, and I begin to wonder just how much one heart can bear.
Chapter 121. Hardin. "You're free to go." I release Landon from his babysitting duties.
"I'm not going. She's just got here," he replies, challenging me.
I guess he's one of the biggest reasons, if not the only reason, that she wanted to come to this damned place at all. "Fine," I huff and lower my voice. "How was he while I was gone?" I quietly ask.
"He was good. He's less shaky, and he hasn't thrown up since yesterday morning."
"Fucking junkie." I run my hands over my hair.
"Fuck. Calm down. It's all going to work out," my stepbrother assures me.
I ignore his words of wisdom and leave him in the kitchen to find Tessa. When I reach the bedroom door, I hear a strangled sob coming from inside. I take a quick step forward to find her with both hands cupped over her mouth, her blue eyes bloodshot and full of tears as they stare down at the floor. One more step is all it takes for me to spot what it is that she's looking at. Fuck! Fuck! Tess, I had planned on coming up with a plan to fix the problem that I created by ripping up that damned letter, but I just haven't had the chance yet. I was going to find the pieces that were left and try to tape them back together, or at least tell Tessa what I did before she found out on her own. Too late now. Tess, I'm sorry! The apology tumbles out as tears roll down her tear-stained cheeks.
Why did you...
she sobs, unable to finish the sentence. My heart constricts in my chest. For a brief moment, I'm convinced that I'm hurting worse than she is.
I was so mad after you left me!
I begin to explain, walking over to her, but she backs away. I don't blame her.
I wasn't thinking properly, and it was there, on the bed, where you left it.
She doesn't speak or look away from me.
I am so sorry, I swear it!
I frantically proclaim.
I...
she chokes, furiously wiping at her cheeks.
I... just need a minute, okay?
Her eyes close, and a few more tears escape from under her fluttering eyelids. I want to give her a minute like she asked, but I'm selfishly afraid that she'll grow more and more hurt as time passes and decide she doesn't want to see me.
I'm not going to leave the room, I say.
She has both her hands pressed over her mouth, but even so, I hear her let out a muffled cry. The sound cuts straight through me.
Please,
she begs through her pain. I knew she'd be hurt when she found out about me destroying that letter, but what I didn't expect was for it to hurt me so much.
No, I won't.
I refuse to leave her in here alone to cry over my mistakes again. How many times has that happened in this apartment? She looks away from me and sits down at the foot of the bed, her shaky hands clasped on her lap, her eyes half closed, and her lips quivering as she tries to calm herself down. I ignore the push of her hand against my chest when I drop to my knees in front of her and wrap my arms around her body. After a few exhausted efforts to push me away, she finally gives in and allows me to comfort her.
I'm so sorry, baby,
I repeat. I don't know if I've ever meant those words so sincerely before.
I loved that letter,
she says, crying into my shoulder.
It meant so much to me.
I know it did.
I'm so sorry.
I don't even try to defend myself, because I'm a fucking idiot, and I knew how much that thing meant to her. I gently push her back by her shoulders and take her tear-stained cheeks between my hands and lower my voice.
I don't know what to say, except I'm sorry.
Finally, she opens her mouth to speak.
I won't say it's okay, because it's not.
Her eyes are red-rimmed and already swollen from sobbing.
I know.
I bow my head, dropping my hands from her face. Moments later, I feel her fingers press under my chin, tilting my face up to look at her, the way I usually do to her.
I'm upset, devastated, really,
she says.
But there's nothing I can do about it. And I don't want to sit here and cry all weekend. And I certainly don't want you backtracking and beating yourself up over it.
She's trying her hardest to talk herself up, pretending that it doesn't bother her the way I know it does. I let out a breath that I didn't realize I was holding.
I'll make it up to you, somehow.
When she doesn't answer, I press a little.
Okay?
She wipes at her eyes, her makeup smearing under her fingertips. Her silence is making me uneasy. I'd rather be screamed at than have her cry like this.
Tess, please talk to me. Do you want me to take you back to Seattle?
Even if she says yes, I sure as hell won't do it. But the offer is tossed between us before I can think it through.
No,
she shakes her head.
I'm fine.
With a sigh, she stands, sidestepping my body as she exits the bedroom. I get to my feet and follow her. She closes the bathroom door, and I go back into the bedroom to grab her small bag. I know her. She'll want to fix that black smudged mess underneath her eyes. I tap on the bathroom door, and she opens it slightly, just enough for me to shove the small bag through.
"Thanks,"
she says, her voice small, defeated. I've already ruined her weekend, and it's barely started.
"My mom and dad want you to bring Tessa by the house tomorrow,"
Landon calls from the end of the hall.
"And I'm just saying, my mom misses Tessa."
"So? Your mom can see her some other time." Then I realize this might get Tessa's mind off that damned letter.
"You know what? Fine,"
I say before he can get his response out.
"I'll take her by tomorrow."
My stepbrother tilts his head.
"Is she crying?"
"She's... It's not really any of your business, is it?"
I snap.
"You've been back here for less than 20 minutes and she's already locked herself in the bathroom,"
he says, crossing his arms.
"This isn't the time to start shit with me, Landon," I growl. "I'm already at the point of explosion. The last thing I need is you butting your damn nose in where it doesn't belong."
But he just rolls his eyes in a very Tessa-like way.
"Oh, so I'm only allowed to butt in when it involves doing a favor for you?"
What the fuck is his problem? And why do I keep referring to him as my stepbrother?
"Fuck off. She's probably already overwhelmed, so the two of us need to stop this before she lets herself out of that bathroom."
He's trying to reason with me.
"Fine, then stop talking shit to me," I say.
Before he can respond, the bathroom door clicks open, and Tessa, looking put together but very exhausted, shuffles into the hallway, worry on her face.
"What's going on?"
"Nothing. Landon is going to order pizza, and we're all going to spend the remainder of the night as one big, happy family."
I glance at him. "Isn't that right?"
"Yes,"
he agrees. For Tessa's sake, I know. I miss the days when Landon wouldn't smart off to me. They were few and far between, but he's grown ballsier as the months have dragged on. Or maybe I've grown weaker. I haven't a damn clue, but I don't like the shift. Tessa lets out a little sigh. I need her to smile. I need to know she can get over this. So I say, "I'm going to take you by my father's house tomorrow. Maybe Karen can share some recipes or some shit with you." Her eyes lighten and she grins, finally.
"Recipes or some shit?"
She chews on the corner of her bottom lip to keep from grinning further. The pressure in my chest dissolves.
"Yeah, or some shit."
I smile back at her and lead her to the living room, where we are set to enjoy a torturous night of entertaining Richard and Landon. Richard is lying across the span of the couch. Landon is in the chair, and Tessa and I are sitting on the floor.
"Can you pass me another Supreme?"
Richard asks for the third time since we started this hideous movie. I look at Tessa and Landon, who, of course, are completely fascinated by the email love affair that's going on between Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. If this were a modern movie, they would have fucked after the first email, not waited until the last scene to even kiss. Hell, they would have been on one of those hookup apps, maybe only known each other by screen names. How depressing is that?
"Here,"
I groan, sliding the pizza box to Richard. He's already taking up the entire couch, and now he's interrupting me every 10 minutes for more fucking pizza.
"This last part used to make your mom cry every time she saw it."
Richard's hand reaches out and squeezes Tessa's shoulder. I try my best not to scoop between them or bat his hand away. If she had any idea what her father has been doing the last week, if she had watched the drugs leave his system in a mess of vomit and convulsing withdrawals, she'd push his hand away herself and then sanitize her shoulder.
"Really?"
Tess looks up at her father with glossy eyes.
"Yes,"
I still remember you two watching it every time it was on. More around the holidays, of course. Was that... I begin, but halt my vicious words before I utter them.
What?
Tessa asks me. Was that... dog supposed to be there? I dumbly ask. It makes no sense, but Tessa, being Tessa, goes into full discussion mode about the last scene of the movie and that the dog, Barkley or Brinkley, I believe she said his name is essential to the success of the movie. Blah, blah, blah. A knock at the door stops Tessa's explanation, and Landon gets up to answer it. I got it, I say, and push past him. This is my fucking place, after all. I don't bother to look through the peephole, but once I pulled the door open, I wish that I had.
Where's he?
The foul-smelling junkie asks. I step out into the hallway and close the door behind me. Tessa will not be bothered by this shit.
What the fuck are you doing here?
I hiss.
I'm just here to see my buddy, that's all.
Chad's teeth are even browner than before, and his facial hair is matted to his skin. He can only be in his 30s, but he possesses the face of a man pushing 50. The watch my father got me is hanging from his filthy wrist. He's not coming out here, and no one is giving you anything. So I suggest you take your ass back where you came from, before I bash your face against that railing. I say matter-of-factly, and point toward the metal bar in front of the hallway fire extinguisher. Then, while you're bleeding out, I'll call the police and have you arrested for possession and trespassing. I know he has drugs on him, the fucking asshole. His eyes focus in on me, and I take a step toward him.
I wouldn't test my patience, not tonight,
I warn. His mouth opens just as the door to the apartment opens behind me.
Fucking hell.
What's going on?
Tessa asks, moving in front of me. I instinctively jerk her back, and she asks again.
Nothing. Chad here was just leaving.
I stare at Chad. So help him God if he fucking... Tessa's eyes narrow in on the shiny object dangling from his thin wrist.
Is that your watch?
What? No.
I begin to lie, but she already knows. She isn't stupid enough to think it's coincidence that this drug addict fuck has the same exact expensive-ass watch as I do.
Harden.
She glares at me.
So what? You've been hanging out with this guy or something?
She crosses her arms and puts more distance between us.
No!
I half shout. Why would that be the conclusion she draws from this little scene? I'm conflicted between calling her father out and defending myself, or making up yet another lie.
I'm not friends with him. He's leaving.
I shoot Chad one more warning. This time he takes it and backs away down the hall. I suppose it's only Landon who isn't intimidated by me anymore. Maybe I haven't lost my edge after all.
Who's there?
Richard joins us in the hallway.
That man. Chad.
Tessa answers, inquisition clear in her tone.
Oh.
Richard pales and looks helplessly at me.
I need to know what's going on.
Tessa is getting upset. I shouldn't have let her come back here. I saw it on her face the moment she stepped into this damned place.
Landon!
Tessa calls for her best friend, and I look at her father. Landon will tell her everything. He won't lie to her face the way I have so many times.
Your dad owed him money, and I gave him that watch for payment,
I admit. She gasps and turns to Richard.
You owed him money for what? Harden's father gave him that watch as a gift,
she shouts. Okay, this isn't exactly the reaction I was expecting. She's more focused on the stupid watch than the whole your father owed this creep money aspect.
I'm sorry, Tessie. I didn't have any money, and Harden...
Before I realize what she's doing, She's halfway to the elevator. What the fuck?
I panic, running after her, but she slides into the steel cage just before I reach her. Those doors move with torturous slowness any other time, yet when she's escaping from me, they close instantly.
God damn it, Tessa!
I pound my fist once against the metal. Does this place even have a staircase? When I look back down the hall, Landon and Richard are both staring blankly, unmoving. Thanks for the fucking help, assholes. I move quickly and find the staircase, taking two stairs at a time to get to the bottom. I reach the lobby and glance around for Tessa. When I don't see her, I begin to panic again. Chad could have friends with him. They could approach Tessa or hurt her. The elevator opens with a ding, and Tessa steps out of it. The most determined face imaginable covers her features, until she spots me.
"Are you out of your fucking mind?"
I shout at her, my voice filling the lobby.
"He's giving that damn watch back, Harden!"
she shouts back. She stalks toward the glass doors, and I wrap my arm around her waist, yanking her back against my chest.
"Get off of me!"
She claws at my arms, but I don't relent.
"You can't just chase after him! What are you thinking?"
She keeps fighting me.
"If you don't stop moving, I will literally carry your ass back up to the apartment. Now listen to me,"
I say.
"He can't have that watch, Harden. Your father gave it to you, and it meant a lot to him and to you. That watch didn't mean shit to me,"
I say.
"Yes, it did. You'll never admit it, but it did. I know it."
Her eyes are watering again. "Fuck, this weekend is going to be hell."
"No, it didn't."
"Did it?" Her hands stop moving, and she settles down slightly. I gently coax her back toward the elevator, her drug dealer chasing mission aborted, much to her chagrin.
"It's not fair to you that he took that watch because of some stupid bar tab my father ran up. How much freaking alcohol does one consume that they actually owe people money?"
Her temper is flaring, and I'm torn between thinking it's amusing and feeling terrible for what I have to tell her.
"It wasn't alcohol, Tess."
I watch as she tilts her head to the side, looking anywhere and everywhere but at my eyes.
"Harden, I know my father and his drinking. Don't make excuses for him."
Her chest is moving up and down at an unhealthy pace.
"Tessa, Tessa, you have to calm down." "Then tell me what's going on, Harden."
I don't know what else to say. I'm sorry. Sorry that I couldn't shield her from her fuck-up of a father. Just like I couldn't shield my mother from the devastation of mine. So I do something rather alien for me. I say something brutally honest. "It's not alcohol. It's drugs." Tessa's reaction seems at first like no reaction at all. But after a second, she shakes her head and says,
"No, he's not. He's not doing drugs."
Quickly, she steps into the elevator and punches the button for our floor. I jump on right after her, but she just stares into space as the doors close us in.
Chapter 122, Tessa. As Harden and I walk back into the apartment, it feels like the air has become stale and awkward.
"Are you okay?"
Landon asks when Harden closes the door behind him. "Yeah," I state simply, lying. I'm confused, hurt, angry, and exhausted. It's only been a few hours since we arrived, and already I'm ready to go back to Seattle. Any thought I had of wanting to live here again vanished somewhere during the silent walk from the elevator to the apartment door.
"Tessie, I didn't mean for any of this to happen,"
my father says as he follows me into the kitchen. "I need a glass of water. My head is throbbing. I don't want to talk about it. The sink creaks when I pull at the faucet, and I wait patiently for the glass to fill."
"I think we should at least talk."
"Please." I turn to face him. "I don't want to talk. I don't want to hear the hideous truth or some well-intentioned lie. I only want to go back to when I was cautiously excited about trying out a relationship with my father that I never had as a child. I know that Harden has no reason to lie about my father's addictions, but perhaps he's somehow mistaken.
Tessie,
my father pleads.
She said she doesn't want to talk about it,
Harden insists, suddenly appearing in the room. He walks farther into the kitchen and stands between my father and me. I'm thankful for his intrusion this time, but I'm slightly worried over the quick movements of his chest as his breaths become more shallow and labored. I'm grateful when my father sighs in defeat and leaves me alone with Harden in the kitchen. Thank you. I sag against the counter and take another drink of the lukewarm tap water. A worried line forms along Harden's forehead, and he doesn't attempt to hide his deep scowl. His fingers press against his temples, and he leans against the opposite counter.
I shouldn't have let you come here. I knew this would happen.
I'm fine.
You always say that.
Because I always have to be. Otherwise, when the next disaster occurs, I won't be prepared. The adrenaline coursing through me only minutes ago has disappeared, evaporated along with the hope that for once, something could go right for an entire weekend. I don't regret coming here because I've missed Landon so much, and I wanted to pick up my letter, e-reader, and bracelet. My heart still aches over the letter. It doesn't seem rational for an object to hold such significance to me, but it does. It was the first time Harden had ever been so open with me. No more hiding, no more secrets about his past. All of his cards were on the table, and I didn't have to force the confessions from him. The thought that he put into writing it and the way his hands shook as he held it out to me will always remain in my mind. I'm not upset with him, really. I wish he hadn't destroyed it, but I know his temper, and I'm the one who left it here, somehow sensing that he probably would destroy it. I won't allow myself to dwell on it anymore, though it still hurts to think about the shred of paper that was left. That small piece could never hold all of the emotion packed into the words he had scribbled across the page.
I hate that it's like that for you,
Harden quietly says. Me too, I sigh in agreement. The pained look on his face makes me add, it's not your fault.
Like hell it isn't.
Exasperated fingers push through the wave of his hair.
I'm the one who ripped up that damn letter. I drove you here, and I thought I could keep your father's habits from you. I thought that asshole Chad was gone for good when I gave him my watch for the money your dad owed.
I stare at Harden, who's always so wound up, and I want to hug him. He gave away something of his. Regardless of his claims to have no attachment to the object, he gave it up in an attempt to dig my father out of the hole he created for himself. God, I love him. I'm very grateful to have you, I tell him. His shoulders straighten and his head quickly lifts to look at me.
I don't know why. I create nearly every disaster in your life.
No, I'm equally to blame, I assure him. I wish he thought more of himself. If only he could see himself the way that I do. The indifference of the universe does a lot, too.
You're lying.
He stares at me with expectant eyes.
But I'll take it.
I stare at the wall in silence, my brain running over 1,000 thoughts per minute.
I'm still angry that you ran after him like a fucking madman, though.
Harden scolds me. I don't blame him. It wasn't smart. But I also somehow knew he'd run after me in my ridiculous attempt to chase Chad down and take the watch back from him. What the heck was I thinking? I was thinking that the watch represented the beginning of a new relationship between Harden and his father. Harden said he hated that watch, and he refused to wear it, claiming it was outrageous. He's unaware of the times I passed the bedroom to see him staring at it in its box. Once he even had the watch resting in his open palm, examining it closely, as if it might burn or heal him. His expression was ambivalent when he tossed it carelessly back into the oversized black box. My adrenaline got the best of me, I shrug, trying to hide the gentle tremor shaking through me at the thought of actually catching up to the hideous man. I had a bad feeling about him the first time he came to pick my father up from the apartment, but I was unaware of the possibility that he'd return. Out of all the suspicions I held relating to what exactly was happening here, slimy men selling drugs and being paid in watches was never a thought. This obviously was what Harden referred to as taking care of it without me having to worry about it. If I had just kept my behind in the apartment, I could still be blissfully ignorant of the entire situation. I could still see my father in a decent light.
Well, I don't care much for your adrenaline, then. It obviously cuts off the oxygen to your damn brain.
Harden huffs, glaring at the refrigerator beside me.
Should we start the next movie?
My father's voice sounds from the living room. I shoot a sudden panicked look toward Harden, and he opens his mouth to answer for me.
In a minute,
he replies, his tone harsh. Harden looks down at me, his height and irritated expression overpowering me.
You don't have to go out there and fake some bullshit conversation with them if you don't want to. I dare either of them to say shit to you about it.
The idea of watching a movie with my father does not sound the least bit appealing, but I don't want things to be awkward, and I don't want Landon to go just yet. I know, I sigh.
You're in denial, and I get that, but you're going to need to face the music sooner or later.
His words are harsh, but his eyes are sympathetic as he gazes down at me. I feel the heat of his fingers trail down the back of both of my arms. I'll take later. For now, I plead with him, and he nods, not approving but accepting my denial. For now.
Go on and go in there, then. I'll be in a minute.
He tilts his head toward the living room. Okay, can you make some popcorn? I smile up at him, trying my best to convince him that my heart isn't hammering against my ribcage and my palms aren't sweating.
You're pushing it.
A playful smile tugs at the corners of his mouth while he pushes me out of the kitchen.
Go on.
When I enter the dimly lit living room, my father is sitting in his usual spot on the couch, and Landon is standing, leaning against the dark brick wall. My father's hands are on his lap. He's picking at the skin on his fingertips, a habit I had as a child until my mother forced me to give it up. Now I know where it came from. My father lifts his dark eyes from his lap to peer up at me, and a chill runs over me. I can't decipher whether it's the lighting or my mind playing tricks on me, but his eyes are nearly black, and it's making me nauseous. Is he really taking drugs? If so, how much and what kind? My knowledge of drugs consists of having watched a few episodes of Intervention with Harden. I cringed and covered my eyes when the addicts would push the needles into their skin or smoke the frothy liquid off of a spoon. I could barely stand to watch them destroy themselves and everyone around them, while Harden went on about not feeling an ounce of pity for the fucking junkies. Is my father really one of them?
I'll understand if you want me to go.
My father's voice doesn't match the look in his haunted eyes. It's small, weak, and broken. My chest aches. No, it's okay. I swallow and sit down on the floor to wait for Harden to join us. I hear the quiet popping of the kernels, and the aroma of popping corn has already filled the apartment.
I'll tell you anything you want to.
It's okay, really. I assure my father with a smile. Where is Harden? My silent question is answered only moments later when he strides into the living room, a bag of popcorn in one hand and my glass of water in the other. He sits down next to me on the floor without a word and places the bag on my lap.
It's a little burn, but still edible,
he quietly remarks. His eyes move straight to the television screen, and I know he's holding back many thoughts. I squeeze his hand to thank him for keeping them that way. I don't think I'd be able to handle anything else tonight. The popcorn is delicious and buttery. Harden gripes when I offer Landon and my father some. I suspect that's why they refuse it.
What bullshit are we watching now?
Harden asks. Sleepless in Seattle, I answer with a grin. His eyes roll.
Really? Isn't that like an older version of what we just watched?
I can't help but be amused. It's a lovely movie.
Sure.
He looks at me, but his eyes don't stay on mine as long as usual. He uses his sweatshirt to wipe the greasy butter off his fingers. I cringe and make a mental note to soak the shirt longer than usual tomorrow before I wash it. Is something wrong? This movie isn't that bad, I whisper to him. My father is finishing off the remainder of the pizza, and Landon has taken his seat back on the recliner.
No.
He still doesn't look at me. I don't want to comment on his odd behavior. Everyone's already on edge from tonight's events. The movie distracts me from myself and my vicious mind long enough to laugh with Landon and my father. Harden stares at the screen, his shoulders stiff again and his mind miles away. I desperately want to ask him what's wrong so that I can fix it, but I know that it's best to leave him be for now. Instead, I snuggle against his chest with my knees bent beneath me and one arm wrapped around his lean torso. He surprises me by pulling me closer and planting a soft kiss on my hair.
"I love you,"
he whispers. I'm nearly convinced that I'm hearing voices until I look up into his expectant green eyes. "I love you," I reply softly. I take a few moments to stare at him, just to take in how beautiful he is. He drives me insane, as I do him, but he loves me, and his calm behavior tonight is just another indication of that. No matter how forced the behavior is, he is trying, and in that I find solace, a steady certainty that even in the middle of the brewing storm, he will be my anchor. I once feared that he would take me under. Now, I don't even mind if he does. A heavy knock at the door jolts me from Hardin's lap. I've somehow migrated there in my near slumber, and he unwraps his arms from around me and gently places me on the floor so he can stand up. I study his face, looking for anger or shock, but instead he looks worried.
"You're not moving,"
he says to me. I nod in agreement. I don't want to face Chad again. "We should just call the police. Otherwise he'll never stop coming here," I groan, wondering how this apartment could have changed so drastically in the last few weeks. The panic rises into my chest again, and when I look up to gauge my father and Landon's reactions to the intruder, I see that they're both asleep. The television is set on the menu screen for the pay-per-view. We must have all actually drifted off to sleep without realizing it.
"No,"
I hear Hardin say. I rise onto my knees when he reaches the door. What if Chad isn't alone? Will he try to hurt Hardin? I stand up and head toward the couch to wake my father. I barely register the heavy click of high heels across the hard flooring, so when I turn my head and see my mother in all her tight red dress, curled hair, and red lipsticked glory, I'm shocked. Her beautiful face is set in a deep scowl as her darkening eyes meet mine. "What are you..." I begin. I glance at Hardin, and he's calm. Expectant, almost. He allows her to storm past him and stalk toward me. "You called her?" My voice squeaks as the puzzle pieces click into place. He looks away from me. How could he call her? He knows firsthand how my mother is. Why on earth would he bring her into this?
"You have been avoiding my calls, Teresa," she snaps. "And now I find out that your father is here, at this apartment, and he's on drugs."
She storms past me, too, and goes straight for the kill. Her fire-engine-red manicured fingers grip my father's arm, and she yanks his sleeping body off the couch. He topples to the floor.
"Get up, Richard,"
she booms, and I flinch at the harshness in her voice. My father scrambles up to a sitting position quickly, using his palms to support his body weight, and shakes his head. His eyes nearly pop out of his skull as he takes in the woman in front of him. I watch as he blinks rapidly and stumbles to his feet.
"Carol?"
His voice is even smaller than mine.
"How dare you?"
She waves a finger in his face and he backs away from her, only to have his legs hit the couch, causing him to fall back. He looks terrified and I don't blame him. Landon stirs in the chair and opens his eyes. His expression mimics my father's, confused and terrified.
"Teresa, go to your bedroom," my mother demands.
"What? No, I will not," I counter. Why did Hardin have to call her? Everything would have been okay. I'd have a way to move on from my father, probably.
"She's not a child anymore, Carol,"
my father says. My mother's cheeks puff, and her chest rises, and I know what's coming next.
"Don't you dare speak of her as if you know her at all, as if you have any claim on her." "I'm trying to make up for lost time."
My father is holding his ground pretty decently for a man who has just been awoken by his angry ex-wife screaming in his face. I don't know what to make of the scene unfolding in front of me. There's something in my father's voice, something in his tone as he steps closer to my mother, gaining confidence that almost looks familiar. I can't quite put my finger on it.
"Lost time? You don't get to make up for lost time. Now I hear you're taking drugs?" "I'm not anymore,"
he yells back at her. I want to cower behind Hardin, but right now I don't know whose side he's actually on. Landon's eyes are focused on me, Hardin's on my father and mother.
"Wanna go?"
Landon mouths silently from across the room. I shake my head, silently declining, but hoping that my eyes can convey how thankful I am for his offer.
Any more? Any more?
My mother must have worn her heaviest heels. I'm beginning to wonder if they'll leave dents in the floor as she stomps across it.
Yes, any more. Look, I'm not perfect, okay?
His hands move over his short hair, and I freeze. The gesture is so familiar, it's uncanny.
Not perfect! Ha!
She laughs, her white teeth shining through the dim room. I want to turn a light on, but I can't bring myself to move. I don't know how to feel or what to think as I watch my parents scream at each other in the middle of the living room. I'm convinced this apartment is cursed. It has to be.
Not perfect is fine. Doing drugs and dragging your daughter down the same path is deplorable. I'm not dragging her down any path. I'm trying my hardest to make up for what I did to her, and to you.
No, you're not. Your coming back around will only confuse her more. She's already messed her life up enough.
She hasn't messed up her life,
Harden interrupts. My mother shoots him a fiery glare before turning her attention back to my father.
This is your fault, Richard Young. All of this. If it weren't for you, Teresa wouldn't be in this toxic relationship with this boy.
She waves her hand toward Harden. I knew it would only be a matter of time before she started in on him.
She never had a male example to show her how a woman should be treated. That's why she's shacked up here with him. Unmarried, living in sin, and Lord only knows what he's doing. He's probably taking the drugs with you.
I recoil. My blood instantly boils, and the raging need to defend Harden surfaces. Don't you dare bring Harden into this. He's been taking care of my father and providing him with somewhere to live to keep him off of the streets. I hate the way my choice of words resembles my mother's. Harden crosses the room and stands beside me. I know he's going to warn me to stay out of it.
It's true, Carol. He's a good man, and he loves her more than I've ever seen a man love a woman.
My father chimes in. My mother's fists ball at her sides, and her perfectly blushed cheeks flare a deep red.
Don't you dare defend him. All of this,
she waves one clenched fist through the thick air,
is because of him. She should be in Seattle, creating a life for herself, finding herself a suitable man.
I can barely hear anything over the blood rushing and pumping through my head. In the midst of all of this, I feel terrible for Landon, who has kindly retreated to the bedroom to leave us alone, and for Harden, who is, yet again, being used as my mother's scapegoat.
She is living in Seattle. She's here visiting her father. I told you that on the phone.
Harden's voice breaks through the chaos. It's barely controlled, and it sends a shiver over my body, raising the small hairs on my arms.
Don't think that just because you called me, we're suddenly friends, she snaps.
Harden jerks me back by the arm, and I glare up at him, puzzled. I hadn't even realized that I started toward her until he stopped me.
Judgmental as always. You'll never change. You're still the same woman you were all those years ago.
My father shakes his head in disapproval. I'm thankful that he's on Harden's side.
Judgmental? Are you aware that this boy, the one you're defending, weaseled his way between your daughter's legs to win money in a bet he made with his friends?
My mother's voice is cold, smug even. All of the air leaves the room, and I'm choking, gasping for a simple breath.
That's right. He was bragging around campus about his conquest, so don't you defend him to me,
she hisses. My father's eyes are wide. I can see the stormy currents gathering behind them as he looks at Harden.
What? Is this true?
My father is choking for breath, too. It's not important. We've already passed it, I tell him.
See? She went and found herself someone exactly like you. Let us pray that he doesn't get her pregnant and leave her when times get tough.
I can't listen anymore. I can't let Harden be dragged through the mud by both of my parents. This is a disaster.
And not to mention, just 3 weekends ago, a man dropped her at my house, unconscious because of his,
she points to Harden,
friends. They nearly had their way with her.
The reminder of that night pains me, but it's the way my mother is blaming Harden that bothers me the most. What happened that night was in no way his fault, and she knows it.
You son of a bitch,
my father says through his teeth.
Don't,
Harden calmly warns him. I pray that he listens.
You had me fooled. Here I was thinking you just had a bad rep, some tattoos, and an attitude. I could deal with that. I'm the same way. But you used my daughter.
My father dashes toward Harden, and I stand in front of him. My brain hasn't had a chance to catch up with my mouth. Stop it! Both of you! I scream. If you want to go to war over your past, that's your choice. But you won't bring Harden into it. He called you for a reason, Mother, and yet here you are, throwing him under the bus out of anger. This is his place, not either of yours. Both of you can get the hell out. My eyes burn as if they're begging me to shed the warm tears, but I refuse. My mother and father both halt. They look at me, then at each other. Sort your crap out or leave. We'll be in the bedroom. I wrap my fingers around Harden's, and I try to pull him behind me. He hesitates for a moment before using his long legs to step in front of me and lead me down the hallway, still grasping my hand. His grip is tight, nearly unbearably so, but I stay quiet. I'm still in shock from my mother's arrival and blow-up. Too much pressure on my hand is the least of my concerns. I push the door closed behind me just in time to muffle the shouting voices of my parents down the hall. Suddenly I'm 9 again, running through the backyard of my mother's house to my haven, the small greenhouse. I could always hear the shouting, no matter how loud Noah attempted to be in order to mute the unpleasant noise. I wish you hadn't called her. I break from my memories and look up at Harden. Landon is sitting at the desk, making a point not to stare at us.
You needed her. You were in denial.
His voice is gravelly. She made things worse. She told him about what you did.
It made sense at the time to call her. I was trying to help you.
The look in his eyes tells me he really thought it might work. I know, I say with a sigh. I wish he'd run the idea past me first, but I know he was doing what he thought was right.
Damned if I do, damned if I don't.
He shakes his head and plops down on the bed. Looking up at me with real anguish, he says,
"We'll always be reminded of that shit. You know that, don't you?"
He's shutting down. I can feel it just as surely as I can see it happening in front of me. No, that's not true. There's at least some truth to my words, in that once everyone we know finds out about the bet, it'll become old news to them all. I shudder at the thought of Kimberly and Christian finding out, but everyone else around us now knows the humiliating truth.
Yes, it is. You know it is.
Harden raises his voice and paces across the floor.
It's never going to go away. Every time we fucking turn around, someone is throwing it in your face, reminding you of what a fuck-up I am.
His fist collides with the top of the desk before I can stop him. The wood splinters and Landon jumps to his feet. Don't do this. Don't let her get to you, please. I grab a fistful of his black sweatshirt, stopping him from beginning another assault on the already broken wood. He jerks away, but I don't let up. I grab both sleeves this time, and he turns around, fuming.
Aren't you tired of this shit? Aren't you tired of the constant fight? If you would just let me go, your life would be much easier.
Harden's words come out clipped and loud, and each syllable cuts deep. He always does this. He always goes for self-destruction. I won't allow it this time. Stop that. You know that I don't want easy and loveless. I gather his face between my hands and force him to look at me.
Both of you listen to me,
Landon interrupts. Harden doesn't look at him. He keeps his furious gaze on me. My best friend, Harden's stepbrother, walks across the room to stand only feet away from us.
You guys can't do this again. Harden, you can't let people get into your head like that. Tessa's is the only opinion that matters. Let hers be the only voice in your head,
he tells us. It's as if the black rings around Harden's eyes visibly shrink as he takes in the words.
And Tess?
Landon sighs.
You don't need to feel guilty and try to convince Harden that you want to be with him. You staying around through everything should be proof enough.
Landon has a point, but I'm not sure if Harden will see it through his anger and pain.
Tessa needs you to comfort her right now. Her parents are screaming at each other in there, so be here for her. Don't make this about you,
Landon tells his stepbrother. Something in his words seems to click in Harden's mind, and he nods, tilting his head down to press his forehead against mine, his harsh breathing slowing with each breath.
I'm sorry,
he whispers. I'm going to go home now. Landon looks away from us, seemingly uncomfortable with witnessing the intimacy between Hardin and me.
I'll let my mom know you'll be by.
I move away from Hardin to wrap my arms around Landon's neck. Thank you for everything. I'm so glad you were here, I say into his chest. His arms tightly hug me, and this time Hardin doesn't pull me away. When I step out of the embrace, Landon leaves the room, and I look back at Hardin. He's examining his bloody knuckles, a sight that was beginning to turn into a distant memory. Now I'm seeing it again as the thick blood drips onto the floor.
About what Landon said,
Hardin says, wiping his bloodied hand on the bottom of his sweatshirt.
When he said yours should be the only voice in my head. I want that.
When he looks up at me again, his expression is haunted.
I want that so fucking bad. I can't seem to shake them. Steph, Zed, now your mom and dad.
We'll figure it out. We will, I promise him.
Teresa?
My mother's voice resounds from outside the door. I had been too wrapped up in Hardin to notice that the noise in the living room had dissipated.
Teresa, I'm coming in.
The door opens on the last word, and I stand behind Hardin. This seems to be a pattern.
We need to talk about this. All of this.
She eyes Hardin and me with equal intensity. Hardin's head turns, and he looks down at me, raising an eyebrow for approval. I don't think there's much to discuss, I say from behind my shield.
There's plenty to discuss. I'm sorry for my behavior tonight. I lost my mind when I saw your father here after all these years. Please give me a little time to explain. Please.
The word please sounds foreign coming from my mother's lips. Hardin steps away, exposing me to her.
I'm going to go clean this up.
He lifts his battered hand in the air and exits the room before I can stop him.
Sit down. We have a lot to discuss.
My mother runs her palms down the front of her dress and pushes her thick blonde waves to one side before she sits down on the edge of the bed.
Chapter 123. Hardin. The cold water blasts from the faucet onto my torn flesh. I stare down at the sink, watching as the red-stained water swirls around the metal drain. Again. This shit happened again. Of course it did. It was only a matter of time. I leave the bathroom door open so I can easily access the room across the hall if I hear any screaming. I have no fucking idea what I was thinking when I called that bitch. I shouldn't call her that. But she is one, so bitch it is. At least I'm not saying it in front of Tessa. When I called her, I could only think of Tessa's blank expression and naive remarks, saying things like, "He's not doing drugs," as she tried to convince herself of what was obviously not true. I knew she'd come undone at any moment, and for some stupid fucking reason I thought her mum being here could possibly be of help. This is precisely why I don't try to help people. I have no experience in it. I'm pretty damn excellent at fucking shit up, but I'm no saviour. A flash of movement in the mirror catches my eye, and I look up to see Richard's reflection staring back at me. He's leaning against the narrow doorframe, his expression wary. What? Did you come to try and shank me or something? I say flatly. He sighs and runs his hands over his clean-shaven face. No, not this time. I scoff, half wishing that he would try and come at me. I'm certainly wound up enough for a brawl or two. Why didn't either of you tell me? Richard asks, obviously referring to the bet. Is he fucking serious? Why would I tell you? And you sure as hell aren't stupid enough to believe Tessa would tell her father, her absentee father, some shit like that. I turn the faucet off and grab a towel to apply pressure to my knuckles. They've stopped bleeding, for the most part. I should learn to switch hands, punch with my right from now on. I don't know. I feel blindsided. I thought you two were just opposites attracting, but now
I'm not asking for your approval, nor do I need it.
I walk past him and hurry down the hallway. I go and grab the bag of burned popcorn that still rests on the floor.
Let hers be the only voice in your head,
Landon's words echo through my mind.
I wish it were that easy. And maybe it will be one day.
I sure as hell hope so.
I know you don't. I just want to understand all this shit. As her dad, I feel obligated to beat your ass.
He shakes his head.
Right, I say, wanting to remind him again that he hasn't been her father for over 9 years. Carol was a lot like Tessa when she was young, he says, following me into the kitchen.
I recoil, and the bag nearly slips from my fingers.
No, she wasn't.
There is no way in hell that this could be true. Honestly, I used to think Tessa was just like that prudish, bitchy woman. But now that I actually know her, I'm sure that it couldn't be further from the truth. Her struggle to appear perfect is certainly the result of having the woman as her mother. But otherwise, Tessa is nothing like her.
It's true. She wasn't quite as nice, but she wasn't always...
He trails off, grabbing a bottled water from my fridge.
A bitch!
I finish his sentence for him. His eyes dart down the empty hallway, as if he's afraid she's going to appear and toss him around again. I'd like to see that happen, actually.
She was always smiling. Her smile was something else. All the men wanted her, but she was mine.
He grins at the memory. I didn't sign up for this shit. I'm no fucking counselor. Tessa's mum is hot as hell, but she's got a constant stick up her ass that someone needs to remove. Or maybe the complete opposite.
Okay.
I don't get the point here.
She had so much ambition and compassion then. It's really fucked up. Because Tessa's grandma was just like Carol, if not worse.
He laughs at the thought, but I cringe.
Her parents hated, I mean, hated me. They never hid it, either. They wanted her to marry a stockbroker, a lawyer, anyone except me. I hated them, too. May they rest in peace.
He looks up at the ceiling. As fucked up as it is to say, I'm grateful that Tessa's grandparents aren't around to judge me.
Well, obviously you two shouldn't have been married, then.
I close the lid on the trash can, where I've just dropped the bag of popcorn, and lean my elbows on the counter. I'm frustrated with Richard and his stupid fucking habits, which are upsetting to Tessa. I want to kick his ass out and send him right back onto the streets. But he's almost become like a piece of furniture in this apartment. He's like an old couch that smells like shit and always creaks when you sit down on it, and it's uncomfortable as shit. But for some reason you can't throw it away. That's Richard. His face falls and he says softly,
"We weren't married."
I tilt my head slightly out of confusion.
What? I know Tessa told me that they were. Tessa doesn't know. No one does. We were never married, legally. We had a wedding to please her parents, but we never filed the paperwork. I didn't want it.
Why? But maybe a more important question is, why am I so interested in this shit? Minutes ago, I was imagining slamming Richard's head through the drywall. Now I'm participating in gossip like a fucking teenage girl. I should be listening at the door of my bedroom, making sure Tessa's mum isn't filling her head with bullshit to try to take her away from me.
Because marriage wasn't for me.
He scratches his head.
Or so I thought. We did everything as a married couple. She took my last name. I'm not quite sure how she pulled that off. I think it was like she thought that by doing it, I'd finally consent or something. But no one knew the sacrifices she made for my selfishness.
I wonder how Tessa would feel about this information. She's so obsessed with the idea of marriage. Would this diminish her obsession or fuel it?
Over the years, she grew tired of my behavior. We fought like cats and dogs, and let me tell you, that woman was really...